like to go back with you to the second parak of Avos, the sixth Mishnah, Hil Omer, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur. Person should not set himself aside from the Tzibur. Do not trust in yourself or believe in yourself till the dying day. Don't judge someone else until you are in their place. Don't say things you don't want heard because it will be heard. Don't say it. When I get a chance, I'll learn. You might not get the chance. So the second point of Hillel's statement, do not believe in yourself. Rabbeinu Yonah explains this part of the Mishnah in two different ways. He begins by saying this is relevant to Chassidus and it's relevant to Emunah. So he begins by saying a person may do a lot of right things and do mitzvahs and learn Torah and give tzedakah, and he may believe that he's a tzaddik because he does all the right things. So Rabbeinu Yonah says a person should not be a tzaddik in his own eyes and say, listen, I've been so good all these years and I have control of my Yetzer Hara, so I don't have to worry about the Yetzer Hara anymore. He can't get me. He can't take me off the derech because I've been so good for so long. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that's what Hill is referring to when he says don't trust yourself. Because there are times when you think that you have vanquished the Yetzer Hara and you're mistaken. And the Yetzer Hara is waiting and he's lurking and he's looking for the opportunity to catch you. And he may just well do that. And there are people who were very good for many years, all of a sudden they find themselves doing things they shouldn't be doing. And the person can't have full faith in himself and trust himself that he will never do something terrible, because he might. The Mishnah is saying, until a person dies, he really doesn't know what may happen with him. And therefore, he has to always be on guard. That's essentially the concept. Always be on guard. The Pasuk says, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megurei Aviv, and Yaakov lived in the land of his father's sojourn. And Rashi brings the Chazal, B'ikesh Yaakov Leishev Shalva. He wanted to relax a little bit after all his years. Kavtso Lof Rigzo Shal Yosef. So jumped on him the whole story with Yosef and the brothers and Salt Mitzrayim. Where did Chazal see that Yosef Yaakov was guilty of this B'ikesh Leishev Shalva? Where do they see that? Where do you find that Yaakov was B'ikesh Leishev Shalva, that because he did that, therefore he had to suffer Mechiras Yosef? So Mechiras Yosef said, it's in the word Vayeshev. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megurei Aviv. It's contrasting. It doesn't say Vayagar Yaakov be'eretz Megurei Aviv. It's Vayeshev be'eretz Megurei. His Aviv, his ancestors, were Megurei. What's Megurei? Lashon Ger. Like an alien in a foreign place. When you're a ger, your guard is up. You're not a local, you're not a citizen, you're an alien, maybe you're an illegal alien, but you're still not from here. And Avram and Yitzchak were always careful. Yaakov came to a point in his life, he thought, finally, Vayeshev, I can let my guard down. I can relax a little bit. Vayeshev, as opposed to Vayagar. B'ikesh Yaakov, Leishev B'shalva. Hashem gave him a distraction that he didn't need, so to speak. Now, the concept is that there's never a point where we can let our guard down. There's never a point where we can think, I have come to the place where my Yetzer Hara can't get me. David HaMelech made a similar mistake. He said, my heart is vacant of any Yetzer Hara. There's no way I can be nichshel with a chet. And Bathsheba comes along, and he was nichshel with Bathsheba. So it wasn't adultery, so Chazal got it out of his way to explain, but it wasn't a good thing either, what happened with Bathsheba, because he went into it thinking that, you know, I can take any tests, I'm a tzaddik for so long. It was near the end of his life. He was, he lived to be 70, he was in his 50s when this whole story happened. A person cannot trust himself until the very end. The person can never let his guard down. So that is the first Yisoid that Rabbeinu Yonah says. The second is, when it comes to Emunah, when it comes to Hashkafa, when it comes to the way we think. So when it comes to Emunah, it's also, a person shouldn't think that I won't be influenced from other ways of thinking because I have been true to Hashem and proper hashgachas for so long. What can possibly go wrong? And it gives the example of Reb Meir, who was an exception. Reb Meir learned Torah by Elisha ben Avuya Acher, and Chazal were very unhappy with Reb Meir for doing that. And Reb Meir explained himself, Rimon Matzah, he saw a pomegranate, he ate the fruit and discarded the peel. That he was able to take from Elisha ben Avuya the Torah and not everything else. And this is not a model of how it's supposed to be. And there were Kahanim Gedolim, for example, who for 70 years was Erlich, and then at the end became a Tzeduki. So a person cannot trust himself. Altaba Ascha Ad Yom Ascha. Until a person dies, he really does not know if he will end up being Erlich to the very end. So a person has to always be on guard, whether it's in mitzvahs and sitzvahs as opposed to averus, whether it's in emunah and hashkafa. A person never comes to a point in his life when he could let his guard down. Ultimately, we could rephrase it by saying a person always has to grow in Yirat Shamayim, no matter what station they are in life. I remember vividly taking my sister, my older sister, for a bracha to her Rav Ruderman Zecher Tzadik bracha. Rav Ruderman was in his 90s, the Rashiv of Nei Yisrael at the time, and he had an office. And I made an appointment, and I took my sister, and I was walking out of the office just to stand outside the door, and he started screaming at me not to leave the room. Can't leave the room. Can't be Yichud. Can't be Nesu Yichud. Can't leave the room. I had to be in the room with Rashiv and my sister. And it just struck me, like, the year of Shemayim, there would have been no issue had I been with the door open, standing right outside the door. I thought, a little privacy, he would not let me out of the room. He had to stay in the room. So, it makes no difference how old, it makes it until a person cannot trust himself. Now, the real point of the statement of Hillel, I believe, is that people can't trust their judgment. Because basically it's a judgment call, that a person is making this judgment call that I am now able to do things that maybe I couldn't do when I'm younger, but I'm older, and it's not so bad, and it won't affect me, and it won't influence me, and I could read certain things and see certain things that maybe I couldn't do before, but now I can. And he's saying, no, don't make a mistake in your judgment, because you don't know where this could potentially take you. You don't know where it could lead, and your judgment may be flawed. The very next line that Hillel said in the Mishnah, don't judge your friend until you're in his place. And Abayna Yonah says, a person shouldn't trust himself and be soymich on his das more than he should. Because you'll see your chaver, and you think he's on a high madrega, and then he does something which seems out of place for that person. You can't say, you know, if I was so chashev, I never would have done that thing that he did. You have no idea. You don't know. Maybe his madrega is not the madrega you think it is. Maybe the thing he's doing isn't so bad. And your judgment is flawed. It's the exact same concept again. Judging someone else, almost by definition, is going to be flawed. How can you judge them if you're not in their shoes? And what's easy for one person is hard for somebody else. You can have two people doing the exact same mitzvah, and one in Shemayim gets tremendous sechar, and one doesn't get so much sechar, because for one it's a tremendous nisayon, tremendous hurdle to overcome, and for the other one it comes easy. And two people could do the identical avera, and for one person the punishment could be severe, and the other might not be so, because one knew better and one didn't know better, whatever it is. We have no idea. We can't gauge these things. And the Rambam goes to the extent of writing that ultimately, when it comes to mitzvahs and averus, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't only count the mitzvahs and the averus, he counts how did you do the mitzvah? Did you do it with kavana? Did you do it with geschmack? Did you want to do it? Did you do it with enthusiasm, with passion? How did you do the avera? Were you like dragging your feet? Were you running? Were you excited? Were you upset? Was it with passion? The same things. And he says, only the Ribbono Shel Olam can make these judgments. Only the Ribbono Shel Olam knows not only what you did, but how you did it, and what was going on inside of you at the time. So, for a person to think that he can make these judgments about other people is another overstepping the bounds of his abilities of what he's thinking. The same way Hillel said, don't trust yourself, you can't trust yourself to judge other people either. You're not capable of making those judgments. If you'd be in their shoes, who knows? And therefore, you can't draw conclusions. And it's for some people, it comes easy, for me it's a challenge. But ultimately, this all goes into judge people at Kafsichus. And you don't know where they're coming from, and you don't know what their family situation is, and you don't know, and on and on and on, it just keeps going like that. So you really cannot be a judge of other people, and therefore you should always judge them favorably. Then he says, what did he say next? Don't say something that should not be heard, because it will be hurt. And it sounds like simple advice. If you have a secret, even to your best friend, you don't tell the secret, because eventually someone's going to hear about it. And there's an expression, Ki asnayim lekaisel, the walls have ears, and you keep it to yourself. Ultimately, in my mind, this is also a judgment call. You make a judgment. I could tell him, he won't tell anybody else, no one will find out. And if no one is supposed to find out, you don't tell anyone, because what's going to happen is, you tell this person, no one can know. They say themselves, they didn't mean my spouse. They didn't mean them, so I can tell my spouse. So they tell the spouse. And the spouse may not tell anyone either, but they may slip and say something which leads someone else. It's going to get out. And I'm not going to say I'm a big fan of keeping secrets from your spouse, but at the same time, if you're told something in confidence, you keep it to yourself. And ultimately, if you have something that should remain in confidence, then it remains in confidence. Now, there are some things that maybe you would share and only share with a spouse, and it stays right there. Both of them understand, then it stays between the two of them. But ultimately, the concept is, don't misjudge. Again, this is a judgment call. It's a judgment call. This, no one should find out about it, but I can tell one person. No, you can't. You tell one person, eventually, more than one person is going to find out about it. It's going to get out there. So don't make that mistake in judgment. And the last one, which is well known, you can't say, when I get the chance, I will learn, because you may not get the chance. And very simply put, says, you don't know what tomorrow will bring. You think today, you're not going to have time. Tomorrow you'll have more time. Who knows? Tomorrow you might have less time. We used to hear this in yeshiva a lot, when boys would discuss the concept of going to college and have parnasa, and they'll be able to learn afterwards. Because if you get a good job, then you don't have to work so hard, and you can set your own hours, and you have plenty of time to learn later. But of course, when you're in school, you're not going to have that much time to learn. And the answer was, you can't say, Kisha Efna Eshna, I'll learn later when I get a chance. You may not get a chance. Shema Lo Tipana. And the reality is, looking back in hindsight, most people who can set their own hours and learn a lot, and there are people who don't do that, are usually doing that after they've worked for 20, 30 years very hard. Very few people right out of school have the luxury of working 3 days a week in a professional setting. Whether it's legal, whether it's medicine, whatever it is, you're not working 3 days a week. You're working a lot. Now, there are nurses who talk about work 3 12-hour shifts a week, but we're not talking about nurses. We're talking about Bachur and Yeshiva, unless they want to be a male nurse. The point is, it's not a sound argument to say that I'll have more time to learn. Now, if you want to tell me I want to go to school to be such and such because that's what I'm interested in and I have to, that's a fine argument. I can accept that. If someone wants to say I need this for Parnassa, that's fine. But don't say, the reason I'm doing it is because I'll learn more later. That is flawed. You don't do it because later on I'll have more time to learn, so who cares if I'm not learning that much now? That is a mistake. And I want you to know, there are fellows who go to school who learn a lot. There's a fellow I knew in yeshiva who left yeshiva to go to law school in New York. And he said, if you didn't spend the whole second Seder in Beis Medrash, you were a batlan. In law school, there's a whole chevra of former yeshiva fellows who learned the whole second Seder in Beis Medrash. Now, I'm not saying everyone who goes to law school does that. But there are people who are devoting themselves to learning even when they're in school. And maybe, I don't know if his schedule made him go to school an extra year, perhaps. I don't know what he did with the schedules. But the point is, he took advantage of learning as much as he could, even in school, and perhaps it meant not taking some courses or perhaps not doing something else, and maybe it took a little longer. I mean, ultimately, any yeshiva that offers, this yeshiva locally does not, but there are yeshivas that boys go to school at night, like Nei Yisrael. It takes a lot longer to get your degree that way. You're only going at nights and summers, and you can't take more than two courses a semester because yeshiva won't let. So it's going to take a while to get your degree, but at the same time, you're learning a lot during that time. So yes, I could finish the degree faster if I'm going to school full time, but if the person's committed to learning as much as they can, it's going to spread it out. Now, it happens to be, at least in the Nei Yisrael situation, depending on what you're going to school for, obviously they offer credits and you can use a lot of yeshiva credits towards a bachelor's, and then you're not really losing out at all, and then it's a question of going for a master's and then you take time. If someone wants to go to medical school, it's much harder. You know, in Nei Yisrael they had a rule, you could not take organic chemistry during the year. It's so difficult, of course, it would take away too much time from your learning. So literally the whole summer the fellows who were doing this were living and breathing organic chemistry. But that was the yeshiva's policy. You know, if you're here, this is the yeshiva, and we can accommodate you going to school, but the ikkar is your learning. So to say that I'll just take all the courses now and I'll learn more later, that's not valid. And at any point in a person's life, let's say he never went to college, chas v'shalom, college is treif, he's not going to college, he's going to work, he's going to business, and the hours could be grueling. But eventually I'll get a chance to learn. You can't do that. You can't keep saying eventually. You can't trust that the eventually will come. The bottom line, it's a mistaken judgment. I believe the entire Mishnah of Hillel is saying are people have to be careful in their judgment calls. Al tam ba'atzcha, don't trust yourself for yourself. Don't judge others because your analysis of the other people can be flawed. Don't say things and think I can trust them with a secret because you're making a mistake. Don't think that I'll be able to learn later if I can't learn now. So I won't learn now, learn later. That's a mistake in judgment. And the very first thing he said, Al tifish min hatzibur. Don't set yourself aside from the tzibur. So we talked about this last week. I basically said in the context of people doing a mitzvah, people doing something right, you want to be part of it. You want to have a chelik in that. You don't want to be left out. Maybe there's also a judgment there that a person is saying, listen, they're doing their mitzvah, I'll do my mitzvah, I don't have to be part of it. Maybe it's all part of the same thing. These are all mistakes. The person who's parish min hatzibur, he's doing it because he's a bad person, or he's doing it because he doesn't think it's important, he doesn't see the value in it. He thinks what he does is just as good, just as they do their mitzvah, I do my mitzvah, I don't have to be like everyone else. That's also a mistaken judgment. So perhaps the whole thing is stressing that a person has to be careful in his decisions because they may be flawed. And ultimately, if that is the concept of what Hill is trying to say, then you see it in this week's parsha. And this is where the Balei Musar bring it out, in this week's parsha. Yitzchak Avinu has two sons. He has a Yaakov and he has an Esav. And he makes a judgment call that Esav is a good person, but he's obviously not a Yaakov. We're not going to say to the extent that he thought he was a Yaakov. He knows Yaakov is Yaakov, and Yaakov is special. But the way many Mefarshim put it, he believed Esav was a good person, and Esav would support Yaakov's learning. So let Esav have Olam Hazeh. V'yitin l'chalakim, yitah l'shmai, mishmani ha'aretz, v'ovdogim v'sirosh, the whole bracha that was intended for Esav is a bracha for Gashmis in this world. And the point of giving that to Esav was, as long as you have the Gashmis, you'll use it right, and you're going to support Yaakov sitting and learning and doing Torah mitzvahs. Rivka knew that Yitzchak's thinking was flawed. But it's very hard to tell that to someone, especially your husband, especially if it's a Yitzchak. So she goes through the whole charade, and Yaakov gets the bracha. Yaakov leaves, Esav comes, and the pasuk says, V'yecherad Yitzchak charod gedoyla. Yitzchak shuddered, a terrible, terrible shaking, a terrible fright. And the Lashon HaChazal is that he saw Gehenim open up beneath him. What does that mean, he saw Gehenim open up beneath him? I believe it's Chaim Shmulevitz who says that Yitzchak Avinu had to confront the reality that he made a mistake about who Esav was. The fact that Yaakov got the bracha, that it worked out that he got the bracha, clearly was an indication that Esav should not have gotten the bracha. which means he had made a grave error about Esav. And if he made an error about Esav, what other errors had he made? He was so convinced that Esav was a good person who support Yaakov, and it was a mistake. If he can make that mistake, he can make other mistakes. All of a sudden, he sees Gehenna in front of him. He's shaking, he's trembling. Charada gedola. How much of my life have I gone the wrong derech, thinking I'm on the right derech? No matter how great a person is, he has to realize that he may be in error. And then we bring in the Gemara in Brachas that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was ill and his days were numbered. His Talmidim come to visit him and they see him crying. And they say, Rabbi, why are you crying? And he says, why am I crying? There are two paths in front of me. One to Gehenna, one to Eden. I don't know which one I'm going on. He started by saying a whole thing. Madach, if I'd be going to judgment in front of a flesh and blood king who I can bribe and his punishment is not eternal, and I'd be terrified. I'm going in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. If I'm punished, it's forever. I can't bribe him. Of course I'm terrified. There are two paths. I don't know which one I'm going on. At the end of the Gemara, it says, Panu Moko, make space. I think it was Chizkiyahu HaMelech is coming to take me to Shemayim. So by the end of the story, he knew where he was going. But the Gemara is teaching us a lesson. Now, as far as his personal case, I don't believe he didn't know where he was going. It's hard for me to believe he didn't know where he was going. And in fact, I would like to infer from the wording of the Gemara. The Gemara says his Talmidim came in and he started to cry. It doesn't say he was crying and they came in and found him crying. He wasn't crying. They came in, he started to cry. I think he was trying to teach his students a lesson. It was the last lesson he would teach them, but he's teaching them a lesson. Don't altamin ba'atzma ad yomoscha. You don't know till the very end. This is what we learn from Yitzchak Avinu, this is what Yochanan ben Zakkai, that's what Hillel's trying to say. Yes?
I always wondered about this because, like, we always hear stories, you know, like our tzaddikim or gedolim say, you know, they're not sure, you know, if they're going to go. Like, are they always only saying it to teach us a lesson? Because if they're not sure where they're going, how are we ever supposed to have any hope for ourselves? You
right.
know what I mean? Like, we're nowhere near them.
Right. So on the one hand, there is the lesson that a person should never rest on his laurels. A person should never feel complacent and comfortable with where he is. A person has to always feel a need to grow and to continue to improve. That's clearly a message that Chazal are telling us. Ultimately, did they really know or not know? Again, I said it's hard for me to believe Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't know. And the Gemara makes a point of emphasizing that at the end he saw who was coming to escort him out of this world. So there was very little doubt at that point of what was going to happen next. Yitzchak Avinu was terrified. That's clear. He was terrified at the realization that he had made such a mistake. And that's a mess. And, you know, the Musa for us is we should never be so convinced. So ultimately, guys, as far as what's hope for us, I'll just tell you practically, on a practical level, I believe it really means, and I've said this in the past, that a person has to, every now and then, reevaluate. So you could say it's every Elul, you could say it's every Aseres Yemei Teshuva, but sometimes it's every few years. Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Am I reaching my potential? Am I doing the things I should be doing in my home, in my career? Is this the right path? And I have asked this question personally. I have gone to people that I believe are great, and I've asked them, should I be teaching in Beis Yaakov still? Should I be doing something else? Is this the right thing for me? I did it before I took the job. Before I ever taught in Beis Yaakov, I asked a child. At the time, I was told I should. Maybe things changed. That was then. Now is now. So I'll revisit the question. I'll often ponder that. Is that the right thing? And it's not just that. It's many different things a person can ponder. It's very nice to be doing the same thing for all these years, and it seems to be good, and I've kind of convinced myself that it's good, but maybe I'm convincing myself and it's simply not. So you have to evaluate. And sometimes you're not a good judge. So you go and sit with someone who you respect and trust and talk it through and hear what they have to say. So it's something that is important, that a person shouldn't just take for granted that the decisions that were right 5 years ago or 10 years ago are still right today.
So you can't make... On their level, they're not taking for granted their greatness, and so therefore on our level, we need to do the same thing.
And every one of us. And also, because some things that... Again, and it doesn't mean you did something wrong 10 years ago, but maybe that's not what you should be doing now. No. Because on two levels, first of all, we have changed, hopefully, and also the world around us has changed. The world today is not the world it was 15, 20 years ago. I think, I don't know how far back to go with you guys, but the world is changing. The world is changing. And as it changes, certain things have to be adjusted along the way. Now, are we happy with the changes? Maybe not. But that's the way it is. And you have to be able to, you can't live in the past, so to speak. And when it comes to your ruchnius, this may be all part of Al Tivish Min HaTzibur also. If the world is going in a certain direction, you can't have yourself locked in my mindset of the way it was then and expect that that's the way it's going to be forever, for the next 120 years. It's not. And therefore, you have to adjust accordingly and appropriately. And again, this needs introspection. I really think it needs someone else, because ultimately, if all his points here are misjudgments you're going to make, to try to do it on your own may not be sufficient. And again, people do have a habit of convincing themselves that they're doing things that are right, because ultimately we all want to be good, and therefore we convince ourselves that we're good. So we really don't know if we are being good or not, because we're convinced of it, but who says we are? So we really have to get feedback. And there are, in the Mishnah and others, other ways. We talk about if the people, what are the brios saying about him? If the brios get nachas ruach from him, then you know in Shemayim there's nachas ruach from that person. That's one of the ways to gauge a person's measure. What are people saying? And we use that as a factor. But ultimately, I do believe there's a value of revisiting certain things and trying to grow, trying to continue to grow. Not to get stagnant, not to be in one place, and not to be satisfied with a certain level that you can get. You really go beyond that. And sometimes people just feel comfortable at where they're at, and they don't want to stretch, so to speak. We have to stretch. You got to stretch, and you can achieve amazing things when you do. So all of this is being able to make proper judgment calls, and again, ultimately, our judgments can be flawed. And I think that's the biggest lesson of it all, that we have to bear that in mind, that we have to be able to reevaluate and be able to adjust accordingly.
There's times when you can trust yourself because you're older, like, I don't know, parents checking books for their kids. Like, why is it okay for them to read it, even if they're sick?
Parents censoring books for their children. Well, it's better than children censoring books for children, you know. I believe the difference in that example is, A, adults have a much better ability to discern fact from fiction or fantasy. Children have a much harder time with that. And B, if something is offensive, so it'll have less of an effect on the adult than it will have on the child. And the adult will see and say, this book's out, and they won't continue. They'll see what's inappropriate and that this book is out. That's still better than the kid reading the whole book. Now, it's not perfect. There was a book that I was asked to censor for Beis Yaakov, a textbook. So I skimmed through it and said a lot of things have to come out. There's an entire, at least as much as that I said has to come out, that I missed that has to come out. I just totally didn't notice it at all. And the book was given out, and a parent got a hold of the book. What is my kid studying here? And they called Rabbi Pass. He called, did you look at this? I said, never saw that. It's like, I agreed 100%. They're literally, as much as I took out, that much more had to come out that I just totally went by me. So, you know, it's, someone has to do it. Someone has to go through these things before you're going to give it out in a school, before you're going to let your kids look at it. And, you know, some parents will just won't bother. And they'll just say, library is off limits. And you'll read all the art scroll biographies that are out there and some Feldheim. And that's it. And maybe you get hold of the most of those press, you know, collections. And that's all you read. And other people, a little more broad-minded, will let their kids read certain children's books that they have checked. I know in school the teachers have book reports and they have books that have been approved for the kids to use for book reports and so on. It is ultimately a parent's responsibility. And again, unless you want them, if you want it to be literate, so then they don't have to study to do book reports, you know, we could skip that whole thing. But if they are going to be literate and are going to be able to write and be articulate, then they're going to have to be exposed to other authors, and then you have to read it through. There was, let's show you how this far this goes. There's a woman that I heard of who lets her kids read books that she screens first, but she will not let her kids read any of the Little House on the Prairie books. Any book in that series is off limits for her kids. So I said, why? Like, Little House on the Prairie books about as innocent as you get. What was wrong with Little House of Prayer books? So maybe there's one about courtship that you could skip. But see, outside of that, so the parent said, I don't want my child to know that there are non-Jews out there that are decent people. And therefore, they didn't want the kids to read the book.
This really happened?
This really happened. They were afraid that their kid would admire and feel that upstanding non-Jews, because that's really, when you read the book, these are very upstanding non-Jewish people, right? And they felt that that had to be screened, you know. We live in Gaulis, we live among non-Jews, you know. I don't know, maybe if we lived in Yerushalayim and you were never going to leave, maybe, you know, but I don't agree with it. I let my kids read Little House of Books. But there is, you know, there is someone who would have such a philosophy. If I'm screening already, they wanted to screen that too.
Isn't that such a weird thing to screen?
I don't agree with it. I don't agree with it. I don't get it. I don't get it. However, they'll argue, doesn't Rashi say in Chumash, Halacha, Esav, son of Yaakov? Shouldn't we be aware that there's everyone around us? If they're not Jewish, they're Esav. That's what they'll say. So shouldn't we train our children that way?
There are still exceptions.
I'm curious if there's that adapting on every other thing. Yeah, on every other.
See, I don't know. And I'll tell you what does bother me, some children's books, even the innocent books. A lot of children's books I've found make the parents out to be bumbling idiots. A lot of books for kids, the parents are total morons. And it's always the kid who knows what's right and wrong, and the parent is the parent is the one who's whatever.
Yeah.
It's not, but it's not just that. It's even a little higher level.
But
I've seen a lot of the kids' books. Why are my kids reading this? Yes, it's clean, and there's no boys kissing girls, and there's no weird words, but the parents are total morons. Is that a chinuch? And he also wondered a little bit, and what are the goyim getting when they read these books? And they're not being censored. And we know, well, they think they're superior than the ones before them. Every generation by non-Jews thinks they're more superior. Because of evolution, the next generation is better than the previous. And we say, the further you are from Sinai, the worse off you are. But again, that bothers me, from a chinuch perspective, that even the books that are ostensibly fine often are, you know, I'd rather than be Little House on the Prairie, for that matter. So, you know, they may get that there are decent non-Jews in the world, but at the same time, the father is the father, and the mother is the mother, and so on. listen, you know, again, in some communities, the library and any of these books are totally off limits anyway. So again, it's different madrigas. Some will say you can't read anything secular. And then there are those who will say you can't read the House on the Prairie. You know, the different madrigas, yesh. I know so there was a raging debate with the Harry Potter books.
How does a person decide for themselves where they stand?
This is going to be more a broader hashgafa issue of how you raise your kids. And that's a husband and wife discussion of what do they want in their house and what books they want them to read. And my feeling is there's nothing wrong with having at home a kosher library of non-Jewish books for your kids to read that you know are fine. If I'm not mistaken, the Hardy Boys books are fine, right?
Yeah.
So you have a collection of Hardy Boys books for your boys. The House of the Prairie books, whatever it is. There are books that the kids can read. Again, a lot of the contemporary books have things in it that are very contemporary that I would not want my kids to read. So again, these are things that it's a judgment call you're going to make. You know, if you wanted a set of rules, I know there's a set of rules in Beis Yaakov Library of which books are acceptable. We have Mamash wrote up a rule sheet of what are the things that cannot be in a book if it's going to be in this library. It doesn't have to be a Jewish book, but then what are the things that it can't have in it? And, you know, if I think most of us really on our own can figure that out. But what becomes touchy is if there's a mention of a non-Jewish holiday in the book. Does that mean the whole book is banned because they're giving each other presents on a certain day? To me, that's okay. But so others, they don't want even that word in the book. So then that becomes an issue. So it's very hard to get a standard that every parent in your student body is going to agree upon.
For books like Harry Potter, especially the earlier books where there's really nothing like relationship-wise.
Just Kishuv, right? Just the magic of it.
Right. Why would those not be allowed?
Right. So those who are anti-Harry Potter books in general are because if witchcraft is something that the Torah deems evil, then you don't want your kids exposed to that.
But it's
I'll tell you my interpretation of this Kishuv evil, and maybe, I know I'm not alone, but it may sound bizarre to you as well. There are many camps, day camps, overnight camps, maybe even some schools, Jewish schools, camps, that will entertain the kids with a magic show. I personally think it's wrong. Very wrong. And the reason I believe it's wrong is the following. There is a pasuk, several pasuk in the Torah that is prohibited to do anything that's witchcraft. Witchcraft is forbidden. Any form of witchcraft, any form of necromancy, bringing up the dead, it's all forbidden. Punishable by death. This is serious stuff. This is worse than eating chazir, we just get malchus. These are punishable by death. There's a machlokas we've shown him whether or not sleight of hand is included. The Rambam in the Yad HaChazaka says sleight of hand is osur min haTorah. It's not punishable by death, but it is an issur d'oraisa. Sleight of hand is osur min haTorah. So when someone does a magic trick or magic show to entertain, contemporary poskim debate if it's osur or not. There are those who say it's outright forbidden, Chacham Avad Yosef and Tshuvas. There is a tshuva from Rabbi Moshe where he said, if he explains, this is not magic, it's just a trick, then maybe it's okay, because he's explaining it's not at all magic. If he tell you a sleight of hand, even though the Lashon Rambam lends itself that it's totally forbidden. Either way, why do I want my children to be entertained by something which is probably an issur d'oraisa, and certainly it's poor chinuch? And later I found a letter that was written many years ago, signed by Rav Shach and the Stipler Zichrono Levracha, with this exact point. In Eretz Yisrael, Lag BaOmer, Chol HaMoed, they have these magic shows. It's terrible. It's terrible chinuch. To me, the chinuch is what's bad. If you're an adult and you know that it's sleight of hand, so you can get into the machlokas, is it also or not? For children, they're impressionable. And every magician, you have to be honest, every magician wants the kids to believe that he's special. and he could do things special, and he has to say special words and use a special wand and a special hat. That is part of the presentation. They're not going to tell the kids, this is all a bluff, it's all sleight of hand. That's not how it works. So even for an adult at a chasna, you could tell me, don't get so excited, it's okay, fine. For little kids, elementary school kids, to me it's a horrible chinuch. So that I think is wrong. I really think that's wrong. And my daughter's in camp, I have a magic show, and she walks out, I don't watch magic. Good for her. You know, the camp wasn't going to stop the magic show, but she knew. And years ago, when it happened here, I took my kid out of camp for that day, took him to get Slurpees, whatever it is, and I stopped it. They don't have it anymore. It used to be a standard, and they don't do it anymore, at least not here, in Beis Yehuda. And if I even have a whiff of it, I bring it up with the dean, I tell him, I think it's wrong. It's just not proper chinuch. So what's Harry Potter now? Is Harry Potter also improper chinuch? The world of wizards and muggles and so on? Or, in my mind, honestly, it has no shaychus to magic at all. The world of Harry Potter is a world of a super race, like a Superman from a planet, Kryptonite, was that what it's called, Krypton? They're a different kind of person. Either you are or you aren't. That's not Kishuv. Every one of us can do Kishuv. The Torah isn't saying there are some people born deviant and they have to worry about doing some things. No. Every one of us. Don't eat pig, don't wear shatness, and don't do magic. It's all the same. Anyone can be guilty of any of those three. You don't need to be born that way. Now, maybe some people are better at it, like anything. Some people may have a better tendency to it, like anything, which is true. But it's not that you're born or you're not born. So the whole concept of the Harry Potter, essentially, they're using the words of wizard and magic, and they're taking the concepts, but they really have altered it to become like an alien or a Superman or someone who has powers that no one else has. And that's not at all what the Torah's Kishuv is about. So
yeah,
technically,
people who can't do it, then you have this whole group that can, and they like.
It's not a question they can. They either you're born or you're. What are the words?
Right, but I'm saying okay.
Something about the blood.
Who
I know something
the
blood.
Wizards,
not blue blood. They have a different word for it. Mud blood. There's different words, right? The Lashonis. The whole new vocabulary came out of Harry Potter. My point is, That's not how it is in the Torah. In the Torah, any man or woman could be guilty of Kishuv. And the Torah says don't do it. And some people do. And some people don't. But so it's different. So again, for chinuch, I could hear some people say, magic is also a treif. So I don't think it's that way, because it's not really what the Torah's magic is about. But they sell in the stores Ouija boards, and you sit there with your hand in the thing. It's the Parmenis of Diraisa. And I would say, come on, it's a toy. It's a game. It's nothing. Until I have a friend of mine who is older, single, teaching in a school in somewhere in the South, not going to say where. And a girl says to him, oh, I heard you go to New York to go on a date this weekend. And he was. Who told you? My mother. Her mother's been dead for 10 years. I communicate with my mother. We have the Ouija board. And I talk to her. And he calls me up, all shaken up. I said, it's possibly real, and it's also D'oraisa. That's also D'oraisa. She can't do it. You have to tell this kid not to do it. Yeah?
Where does a
Makubal
come in?
A Makubal?
Not doing magic.
Not magic, but we went to them and then...
Some might. I'm not saying all Makubalim aren't doing magic, but the Makubalim, the legitimate, the real ones, who are Erlich HaYorei Shemayim. They could be knowledgeable in an area of Chachma that we call Kabbalah. There are a lot of Chachmas out there that are not Kishuv. There's a Chachma to read palms. It's not Kishuv to read palms. It's a Chachma to know how to read a palm. It's all there. You have to know what it says.
I thought you're not allowed to go to someone who does that.
There's a Isser Lo Sanach Lo Sa'odinu, but that's not reading palms. There are people who read foreheads. You know, it's a chachma. It's like knowing science, astronomy, whatever. It's a chachma. So some people have it.
Anybody
so
could become
good at. I know a very chashuv rav who knows how to read palms. He stopped because the baron told him stop it. He would look at a woman's palm, tell if she's having a boy or a girl. And he was always right when she's pregnant. One time he saw a miscarriage. And he didn't want to say what he saw. And she had a miss, and they weren't crazy. And the Rosh Yeshiva said to stop it. No more. And that was it. Never did it again. Yeah. Know what you're thinking?
Yeah.
That's not kishuv.
It's
real.
So
can they do it? Probably not. There are tricks. There are tricks. No, not tricks. There's chachma. That's what I say. There's chachma. There's a chachma. And if you read up on it, there's a chachma. But I don't believe mental telepathy is kishuv, and I personally believe it's real. But it doesn't mean that it's... There's no place that it's awesome. That's not what we're talking about.
So what happens to the camp?
Yeah, it's all shtick. I once read an article on how they do a lot of what they do. A lot of it is chachma. There's a chachma how to do it. Yeah, that's not. Now again, if they present themselves as doing magic, but it's not even sleight of hand. It's not even sleight of hand. I'm much happier with a mentalist than I'd be with pulling a rabbit out of.
How can any Jewish person get a?
How could it be from magicians?
Yeah.
Right. I have the question too. I know there are. I know there are. They advertise. I know.
Are they unaware that they're doing something like whatever? Or do they
Either they're unaware, which is the Aleph. They're unaware. Not everyone is aware of. Not everyone learns these things. You know, this is a little esoteric. It's a Rav Nechas of the Zohar. And there is there could be a more Erlich one who'll tell everyone, I'm nothing special. I just learned this like you learned accounting and medicine. I learned sleight of hand. And that's all it is.
So
and then according to Maisha, it's mutter. But then you have, there's no abracadabra, no cape, and you've killed the whole show.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So honestly, I don't know. And if it's done with videos and stuff like that, which a lot's done today with visual things, so that's a whole different thing entirely. You know? But again, sleight of hand is a problem.
So
how do you get into this? Oh, Heshkov and Haas. Okay, yeah. How do you judge? Okay, yes. It might say the past too. I don't know if it maybe it's all there.
Okay, so
usually the four tells you what happened.
The handwriting analysis, it's not
right.
You can't see the future now, so that's okay.
Right. You could tell certain things about people through. That's right. That's fine. That's not none of, all these things are chachmas. Chachma is permitted.
What about
it's not
the future?
What?
What is witchcraft?
Witchcraft typically is using keches ha-tumah in the world. Mm-hmm. Using the tumah in the bria to do certain things.
How do you do that?
A lot of it has to do with the deceased.
Can people do that now? Is it possible?
Sure. Is it possible? Well, the Chumash says he can't do it, so I'm assuming it's possible. Did it get lost and most people forget? I'm sure, but I think in the Philippines there are people still do it. Maybe in Haiti, in some third world places,
does
it's still
saying things or like
it has to do mostly with the dead.
Saying things to them, like saying specific
summoning them, conjuring them up. Yeah, there's a whole. There are all kinds of things you could do with. There's Keches HaTumah in the world. In fact, this was last week's parsha. Avraham Avinu gave to the B'nai Keturah the Keches HaTumah. So there is such a thing, but if most people who sell themselves as being capable of it are not, they're just putting on a show. But I'm sure, I suspect there are real witches in the world. I mean, Nebuch, this girl who does the Ouija stuff, the Ouija board, is also a witch, for all intents and purposes. Or she's doing witchcraft. You
what
know?
Does she do?
I don't want to be too descriptive, actually, of what they do. But the equipment is sold in any store cannot. It's very popular as a toy. But she's able to hone in on her dead, deceased mother. And she knows things that she shouldn't be knowing. So...
What about going to tell the future based on facts that they figured out from their Bible or whatever? Their
Bible is nonsense, so it can't be anything.
No, I understand that, but like you just come across these people, you know, like
the bottom line is don't go to fortune tellers and don't go to card readers.
No,
it's all
I'm
it's all
I'm saying like these people, like you'll walk in the city in New York City and you'll see these people standing on the street. So I know that they're loony
right.
Because they're always crazy, but like what about these people who say like, you know, oh the end of the world
can
or oh this or oh that? What
right.
What is their basis?
They have no basis. But there could be people who do inquire from the deceased. It's possible. Listen, whoever says it's all nonsense, just learn Navi. Shmuel Beis. The witch in Ein Dor summoned Shmuel from the grave. I mean, this is real. So,
the same way things were taken away from us. Like
it does, right. It doesn't mean. So, we don't find anywhere the Gemara says we lost Kishuv. And I think it's probably out there, and we have to just be careful. And in practical applications, again, ultimately, we're getting back what you bring in your house and what's right in your house and not right in your house. My feeling is this is one of the things you should be careful with. If you've been careful already, be careful with things that are touching on those things the Torah says are forbidden. To me, that's not kosher entertainment.
Okay.